time for the Truth About Mortgages New Zealand. Christchurch, RDU, Max and Stacy. Stacy, calling Stacy.
Hello. Hi there.
Oh, yeah. What's happening?
No, I said that first.
Oh, okay.
I started it.
Well, okay then. We got plenty to talk about this week. I just want to take a deep breath and enjoy this moment of calm before the storm of the onslaught of news and information that we're going to present to the fabulous folks in Christchurch, New Zealand over the next 30 minutes with the occasional musical break.
We have two music breaks, but tell me, what have been the big headlines that you liked reading about this last week? We had the G20,
yeah,
of course. We have we have the IMF, you know, telling the UK to slash their healthcare.
Oh yeah, tell the people about this whole story in the UK. Apparently, the NHS, which is the National Health Service, you know, what's going on there? This is really hilarious.
Well, you know, the UK budget deficit next year will hit something like 13%,
mm-hmm,
a bit over it. And now the reason why the UK is so in debt is because, I think, twofold, which is one is their oil exports have plummeted. They're, in fact, importing 50% of their natural gas this year.
Oh my God.
For the first time. And the other thing is that what little money they have is they've bailed out all the bankers, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've handed billions upon billions upon billions, in fact, maybe even over a trillion, to bankers who are all going to be collecting record bonuses this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's, you know, justifiable in a system like they have, mm-hmm, of course. So they're so in debt that the IMF says they have to do something about this. And they don't say stop giving money to bankers.
No.
And, you know, take some money back from the bankers. No, what they said is privatize your healthcare system,
mm-hmm,
and cut the government monies towards the healthcare system.
Right. So this is an interesting moment in history. let me see if I understand this correctly. Let's say on one side of the two-way traffic of fraud, let's say fraud is this huge, huge highway of fraud running through the UK economy with cars running in one direction on one side of this massive superhighway of fraud and cars running, you know, in the opposite direction in the other side of the massive superhighway of fraud. So on one side of the superhighway of fraud, you've got the rail system, for example, the transportation system in the UK, which has gone through an incredible experiment of privatization over the past 20 years that has now failed miserably. And the state is in the process of taking all those liabilities on their books and using taxpayer money to rebuild the transportation system after the failure of privatization. At the same time, you've got the National Health Service, which has been state-run and run brilliantly for a few decades, but because it is running so brilliantly and because it is effectively so cost-effective, it could be transformed into an ineffective and money-losing pile of junk like the transportation system has been. So the government is going to give that over to the private developers to destroy while taking on their balance sheet the transportation system, which they allowed the government, or which they allowed the private interest to destroy. So you've got this super grand highway of fraud, larceny, theft, incompetence, and malfeasance running through the UK economy with these huge institutions being bought and sold by the government and the public interest, depending on whenever any given year, depending on the interest exclusively of the most aberrant, worst of society, the oligarch parasites that are draining the wealth from the economy and causing a lot of people disease and death and road accidents. Am I got that right?
Well, close. And, you know, the UK, part of their the problem, why they have so much of a debt situation for the government is, you know, they're bailing out these bankers, but many of the bankers don't pay any taxes in the UK because of their, they've got that non-dom tax situation. So if they can even show a tenuous link to another country, if their grandfather was born in, you know, Jamaica, or their grandmother was born in Russia, you know, they don't need to pay taxes to the UK. So a lot of the bankers were expat or found a way to be expats, but living in the UK and enjoying the services there. But that brings me to another situation of the past few days, which has been truly remarkable, is the Cayman Islands.
Yes, yes, tell the people.
Home to 2,000 hedge funds, and it's part of the UK, you know, the remains of their empire. And it looks like the UK taxpayer is backing a £38 million bailout of the country because the Cayman Islands has gone bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to be unable to pay their government employees if it weren't for a bailout from the UK.
Right. Yeah. Well, so the Cayman Islands, which is the one of the most important places for the global money laundering, Ponzi scheme, pyramid scheme, hedge fund industry to do business, ran out of money. And so the UK taxpayer that has seen their economy decimated by predatory hedge fund operators is going to be asked to bail out the Cayman Islands.
Yeah, and taxpayers don't seem to have any problem with that. I mean, they should live in their own muck. If they want to not pay taxes, then fine. Go live in the Cayman Islands or Liberia.
Well,
but,
yeah.
But if it collapses your economy or your country and you need armed guards to get you from point A to point B, then that's your own choice. Why go begging people who pay taxes to bail you out?
Well, we live in a remarkable period in history, really, because up until recently, the modus operandi of dictators and conquering vandals and, what do you call them? People that come in and destroy your country and they take it over.
Vandals, Goths, barbarians.
Barbarians and dictators and whatnot. They would always threaten to kill you. Remember, like mm-hmm. Genghis Khan, you know, he'd be going over the countries there and threatening to kill people and whatnot. Or even in World War II, you know, the dictators of World War II, they were always invading countries threatening to kill people. That was like, you know, the thing that they were going to do if you didn't kowtow to their dictatorial madness. But now they don't threaten to kill anybody anymore. They threaten to make them bankrupt using their weapons of mass financial destruction. So the hedge funds will say, look, give us your money or we're going to bankrupt your country because there's $600 trillion in derivatives and your economy is only worth in the UK, what, $1 trillion, $2 trillion? We can use the power of our $600 trillion in derivatives to kill your economy. And so that's what they use now. But don't be fooled. The underlying message is the same. It's a conquest by financial dictators and oligarchs who want to see you either be a serf to them or die.
Well, speaking of that, Iceland is in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this might have a lesson for New Zealand because they're similarly recipients of the carry trade that went on for, you know, fiercely for the previous 10 years. You know, that's when a low yielding currency like the yen, which was at nearly 0% interest rates, people borrow in that currency, the hedge funds would borrow in that currency and then deposit the money into New Zealand or Iceland, where interest rates were much higher, up to like 14% in Iceland, and pocket that spread.
Mm.
But Iceland's in the news this week. I want to say this is just from people on MaxKaiser.com from Iceland talking about what's going on there, and I'm going to tell you about it after this music break.
Mm-hmm.
So you were talking about financial threats as the new way to control politicians and make them do what bankers want.
Mm.
And then I brought up Iceland because somebody from Iceland was writing on our site this week about explaining what's happening there. And, you know, there's this ICE save situation, or ICE slave, as they call it. And that was a savings account that was offered to Dutch and British citizens, where it was paying interest rates on your savings of something pretty crazy, like 9 or 10%, at a time when interest rates were much lower in the savings rates were much lower in the UK and the Netherlands. So anyway, tens of billions of pounds went into these accounts, and then when the banking system in Iceland collapsed, this iSave obviously went under as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Tony Blair, Tony Blair seized, not Tony Blair. I'm talking about him. Close. I've got him on my mind. My God.
It's like a bad rash.
Yeah. So Gordon Brown basically seized the iSave accounts and closed it down and paid out the savings in full to British citizens, right, even though the EU limit on what a bank is responsible for, their government insurance, is 20,000 euros. So he was making people whole on 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, now he said that the Iceland has to pay this. The people of Iceland have to pay for their bankers' mistakes.
Okay.
So, now remember that people overthrew their last government. They basically forced their government to quit. I think it's David Odson.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought in this green and liberal party alliance to head up their government. And yeah. Now they were saying that they were going to try to force the IMF out, that they didn't want any of the IMF conditions, that mm-hmm. they weren't going to pay the UK more than anything that they could afford.
Mm-hmm.
Now the guy in Iceland who wrote on our site said that the day they said that they were going to get money from Russia, that right. Russia, Putin himself said he would give them the loan that they needed and mm-hmm. that they didn't have to go to the IMF. The day that happened, Gordon Brown used anti-terror legislation against mm-hmm. the Icelandic people.
Mm-hmm.
So he called them terrorists. So right. they backed out of the Russia deal.
Oh, dear.
And now that these green liberal parties are in power, they're now campaigning to basically give the Brits what they want, the British population what they want.
Mm.
So we don't know, like, what the threats they're receiving behind.
Weren't they going to do something last week on Thursday regarding some payments on some
loans? Well, the population themselves, they from Thursday of last week, they went on a 2-week debt repayment boycott. They're not paying any of their debts for 2 weeks.
Like their mortgages and stuff?
Their mortgages and stuff. Mm. So they're trying to get the government to convert their euro loans back into Icelandic krona.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, the krona crashed against the euro, so it basically doubled the cost of servicing their mortgages.
Right. Because they were taken out in different currencies.
They were mostly taken out in euro,
mm-hmm.
because the euro loan rates were like 5% against the Icelandic krona ones of 14-15%.
Right, because the ICE that made it popular to have your savings in Iceland made it very difficult to have a mortgage in Iceland, so you took your mortgage out in euros.
Yeah, well, the population itself they found something in the law which suggests that their banks shouldn't have been legally able to even issue mortgages in euro. So they're right. trying to say that they were invalid contracts in the first place.
Right, and now the people are going to be subjected to IMF austerity measures.
Yes, those are supposed to come in, I think, next year.
Right, which is just a few months off. Now, this is a very interesting cautionary tale, because when the krona collapsed, as we predicted on our movie that we made, and for the past year or so, people in Iceland, in reading the blogs and the emails we get, we're saying, well, yeah, the Corona crashed, but, you know, we really haven't had much problem here. But now, a year later, comes the hangover. And this is also interesting because after the crash in America and the UK about a year ago, there's been this period of a relief rally and some house price stability. But this is just what they call on Wall Street a dead cat bounce. And now going forward, we're going to see the second leg of a huge economic deflation in America, in the UK, and Iceland, and Ireland, and Spain. Right?
That's right. Well, Spain bizarrely gets very little attention just because I don't know why, but, you know.
Gazpacho.
But their crash is quite remarkable in terms of how many people are unemployed there. But I was reading this week an account by a person who went there to look to buy some real estate because he figured with a giant crash and the fact that they have over 1 million surplus homes, like homes that have been built but nobody is living in them. The developers are still sitting there holding them. Well, in fact, the banks are now holding them. But he said there were no offers. There are no deals at all. Zero. They were unwilling to offer any deals because the banks own all the properties, right? These million properties. Mm. And they reckon that they'll be able to, they'd rather hold the books at par on their, at face value on their books than recognize a loss.
Yeah, because they need to state that the value is at par, as you say, to continue the accounting fraud with their bank.
That's right. And remember, Spain, prior to the big crash, and they were one of the very first warning signs of like a tsunami-like situation. Mm. You know, when the water goes out and the tsunami, that's the time to run. Well, remember, we were reporting about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, that Spain, the Spanish banks, were exchanging all of their mortgage securities with the ECB, with the European Central Bank, for euro bonds.
Mm-hmm.
So they were trading, you know, their toxic stuff for these euro bonds. So I don't know how many of these mortgages are actually held by the ECB, and that's why the Spanish banks don't actually have to negotiate, because they have good euro bonds now, or, you know, European Central Bank money.
Mm-hmm.
And once they sell the house, they've got to take that back.
Now, refresh my memory here. In Ireland, with the, what's the program that they've got?
NAMA.
This is good. It reminds me of Vietnam. Well, NAMA, yeah. How much time we got on this segment? Enough?
Yeah, we've got 2 minutes.
All right, tell the NAMA folks in Ireland. We'll go north a bit.
Well, NAMA is basically the government has forced this through, that the Irish taxpayer is going to buy all the mortgage loan, the commercial mortgage loans from these commercial property developers.
Oh yeah.
They're
going to
buy them from them at a 30% discount, they said.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the real book value of these properties are at like 50% less.
Right.
So the government is arguing to the taxpayer that, well, we're long-term investors and we reckon,
right,
we reckon these will be worth something someday.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, but it also begs the question of, like, if they take this off, all these bad debts off the hands of the commercial property developers, does that leave them?
My sister had a penis, she'd be my brother.
But if they now clear the books for these commercial property developers, aren't they just going to go out and build more? Like, start building new projects, thus deflating further the market?
Moral hazard comes to mind.
Moral
hazard. The government is trying to do the work of the market. See, this is amazing. Not amazing, but the market, everyone loves it on the way up. But they don't seem to think that it can do its job on the way down. But that's like saying that we love green lights, but we hate red lights. We love the daytime, but we hate the nighttime. You know, when markets go up and down, that's what markets about. They're great. Just leave them alone for the most part. But they don't like it. When the markets go down and people start squawking, governments start to step in and take control from the markets. And they do so by injecting artificial liquidity that they essentially have borrowed and make the situation much, much worse.
That's right. And we'll be back. But I first want to say it's people don't start squawking. It's the oligarch squawk. And that's when governments act. But we'll be right back after this music break. Yeah, anyway, I was saying that the oligarch squawk and the politicians react. And they always react by taking money from the peasants and giving it to the oligarchs.
Right, so you have Nama in Ireland. You've got now Spain, as you just talked about it. Yeah, it's hard. You know, Spain, the Spanish economy, only 20 years ago, I think their number one export were those espadrille rope sandals.
Yeah, well...
So, you know, let me ask you this. I never hear anything about Portugal.
Yeah, well, neither do I.
I wonder what's going on. Is it just falling off the face of the earth? I mean, we were in Lisbon a few years ago.
Very I think it fell
town.
Off the face of the earth in the 1600s sometime.
Yeah.
And it's time has stood still since then. You go to Lisbon and it really feels like it's a 17th century city.
Yeah.
But not in the way that, Paris has all these old buildings and stuff like that, but they're all shiny and new and, look kind of... There are other new builds around them.
They have shops there and stuff. I mean, it is, they've got Starbucks and whatever, it is. But maybe it's the port of Lisbon. It just seems like it was carved by the ancients with not very sophisticated technology. The port itself just seems like it was kind of dug out by hand or something.
It's also that leper in the main square.
Yeah, it's a very famous leper that hangs out in the main square. And, you think about Jesus. I mean, you see this guy, referring to the leper stories. Here's a real leper. You don't see that every day. And,
sits right out front of the most famous patisserie right there on the famous square in the center. Mm. And our friend who is Portuguese, who goes to Lisbon often, he said, oh, yeah, that guy, he's very famous.
Mm.
It's hard to describe, but he has, a head and... where the head should be, but there's really no face there.
No, it's about twice the size of a normal head, and it's not really identifiable facial features. But, he is beloved by the locals, I guess. And
But it makes the whole atmosphere of all these, this weird sense that time froze in the 17th century.
Yeah, it has that strange phenomenon of frozen time. Like, we've said before in Bangkok, when we were there recently, time froze in 1997 when their economic crisis hit. And you still see posters up from 1997 and things like that. All right, so that was Asia's financial crisis, which, by the way, was brought to you by the same financial tricksters that are responsible for this financial crisis. But it's kind of like Asia was off-Broadway, and then they went to America and the UK, and that was Broadway. They took their tricks of financial fraud that they had perfected in the Asian countries where they hoped nobody was really watching. The New York Times wasn't writing any reviews. And they brought them to Broadway. They brought them to Wall Street and mainstream in America. And the show is playing now. It's in its third year in America. The deflationary spiral and depression is now still going strong in America, starring the same lovable original cast of Tim Geithner, Larry Summers. Hank Paulson is now in the background playing, ready to step up on stage at any moment. And of course, they've got the new star of the show is Barack Obama. He's the new star of the Depression show playing in his third year in America. Bye.
Well, the one little curious thing I've noted about this all, the whole thing, is a lot of the fraud happened through London, right?
Yeah.
Because there was far less regulation. There was zero oversight, and there's actually safe haven for money launderers and oligarchs and stuff. But I think that safe haven was bizarrely just a trick by the bankers against these guys. So you have all these oligarchs, right, who basically looted Russia of their resources. The American bankers didn't actually have to then, bother sending military industrial contractors and stealing the resources themselves
right.
from Russia. Mm-hmm. They just had the oligarchs do it.
Right.
Now, the oligarchs took their $20 billion out, and they were given safe haven in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
But now their fortunes have been wiped out by the banking disaster. But you don't see that. Like, if Putin had taken $12 billion of Abramovich's wealth, don't you think there would have been some sort of, you know, feud, potentially a deadly one between them?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs have taken his $12 billion of his money. But it's like the market decided it. It's not any individual.
Yeah, exactly. Mr. Market came in with his rapacious little reaper and grabbed it all. And now, hey, speaking of Russia, you know, they're pretty well positioned going forward, aren't they? They got natural resources. They got gas, they got oil, they got minerals, and they've got the biggest freshwater lake in the world.
They do, 20% of the freshwater in the world. But they also have, they've also planted their flag on the bottom of the Arctic.
That's right. So, yeah, old Putin seems like he's playing the chess game against everyone else playing checkers. You know, he seems to be really positioning Russia in a pretty strategic way going forward. It would appear to me, it would seem, here at RDU, Christchurch, New Zealand, Truth About Markets.
Well, we don't know. All I know is that there is a big generational shift happening.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of not only just generation of like the baby boomers in America retiring, but it's like the whole empire of America is also going to retire. They're just like retiring, but it never happens nicely. In history, there's always some sort of like chaos and rupture and wars and bad things.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, you know, you learn when in any con game, after you've taken the Mark's money, you got to leave them a little bit just to keep them from becoming violent. You know, as I've explained on before, you know, in the three card Monty games in Times Square, you'll see some tourists show up and lose a few thousand bucks to a three card Monty operator. And then three-card Monty will let him win the last hand of maybe 50 bucks. And the guy leaves the table thinking, yes, I'm a winner. And it doesn't become violent. So that's the cost of keeping the peace. So, yeah, the banks on Wall Street have stolen America's wealth. But, you know, they will give them a few bits and bobs just to shut them up. So, I mean, remember Bush started that when he sent everyone that $600 tax refund check. You know, that's basically just to buy their acquiescence to shut them up while he allowed the banksters to steal hundreds of billions and trillions. So look for, you know, this type of occasional hush money to come through, and that'll keep most of the people quiet.
Well, okay, that's it for this week's Truth About Markets. I hope that kept you happy, thinking of things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one more word to say, and this is from Max.
No. Yes. Bye, y'all.